As we learn these parshiyos of post-Egel Binyan HaMishkan, I want to dwell on how the struggle with Egel informed the Avodah of Mishkan, and really the larger question of how our mitzvah observance changes as we deal with life struggle, that all of us become different, and our mitzvah observance changes based on our station in life. And even the same mitzvahs we fulfilled before, the way we daven, the way we put on tefillin, the way we sit in a sukkah, well, it's a different sukkah based on your present station in life, because the Torah is a Torah ha'adam, a Torah which speaks to the human condition. It's not a Torah of robots. And we will see how in the greater Mishkan story, there's an evolution of sorts in how to relate to the Mishkan based on Chet HaEgel, which really opens up for all of us an evolving relationship to mitzvahs, a developing relationship to mitzvahs based on our present station in Avodas Hashem. Let's develop it slowly. Let's deal with the meta question. We are taught by Chazal in many, many places that the Mishkan was a kapara for Chet HaEgel. And therefore, it would be very direct and linear to believe that the entire Tzivui HaMishkan came after Chet HaEgel. That would be the very linear approach. The Sefarno takes this and develops this to an extreme. And at least a basic understanding of this is touched upon by Rashi. When Rashi in Parshas Ki Sisa comments on the beginning of the Chet HaEgel story, right? In Perek, Shemos Perek, Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Yud Ches, Vayitin al Mayish Hashem, gives him the luchos, and then the Egel happens. Ein mukta mocha b'torah, says Rashi. Because in reality, Maisa Egel kaidim letzivay hamishka. And this would be an extreme of the Medrash. Mishkan as a kapara for Chet HaEgel. But it is totally at odds with the Pshuto Shel Mikra, the Seder HaMikra. And even those taking such an approach would obviously believe that conceptually the Torah wants us to relate to things differently. The Torah presents Tzivui HaMishkan before Egel, right? Parshas Truma, Tetzaveh, the beginning of Kisisa, are the parshas in which Hashem narrates how he wants the Mishkan constructed. Then the Chet HaEgel happens at the end of Parshas Kisisa. The Kapara of Chet HaEgel, to a degree, the second luchos. And then in Vayakol Pakuti, the Mishkan is built. The simple linear read of the Chumash is, the idea of Mishkan precedes the Egel. Yes, the Egel interrupts the Tzivoy, the ideal of Mishkan with its actualization. But Mishkan certainly does exist before the Egel, and certainly the Ramban's Mahalach of Pshuto Shel Mikra makes it very clear this way, to actually view it, that Hashem commanded Moshe in the Mishkan. There was this interruption, this unwanted interruption of Maase Egel and everything which follows. And then we get back on track and build the Mishkan. And actually, this sequence with Baruch HaPshat makes a lot of sense, as we've discussed in the past. Moshe ascended on high at the end of Parshas Mishpatim. Again, let's get a kind of a sense of the geography here. Parshas Mishpatim ends with Moshe ascending on high for 40 days, 40 nights to receive the Luchos. And the luchos are going to be the heart, the pulsating heart and center point of the Mishkan. The Mishkan contains the Aron, which is called the Aron Ha'edos, because it contains the luchos Ha'edos. So along with the luchos, Hashem is in Parshas Truma Tetzava, narrating to Moshe on high, Truma Tetzava, the beginning of Kisisa, Binyan HaMishkan. It's part of the greater packaging of the luchos. Makes sense. And then Moshe comes down, and if things would have happened as planned, he would have had the luchos, they would have built the Mishkan and it would have been great, but things don't work out that way. Klal Yisrael's Egel derails things, the luchos are broken, we need to reconcile with Hashem, luchos shnius, but then we're back on track and we build the Mishkan. That would be a Pshuto Shel Mikra perspective as reflected by the Ramban. And yet even in the world of the Ramban and Pshuto Shel Mikra, we have to deal with the Chazal, which are saying that the Mishkan serves as a kapara for Chet HaEgel. Apparently, even though there was a concept of Mishkan which preceded Chet HaEgel, once the Chet HaEgel happens, the Mishkan assumes a new function. And I find that idea fascinating. That mitzvahs, as I said before, grow with us, or their meaning grows with us. I put on tefillin, I sat in a sukkah before this traumatic experience. Now, after the traumatic experience and how I responded to it in my avodah shem, it's a different tefillin, it's a different sukkah. It's a different mishkan. Powerful, powerful idea, which I want to dwell on this morning. And
I'm... says that Isfarno, that even in the Isfarno, he says there would have been a mishkan anyway, but it wouldn't have had that kind of central role to Yadus, to our spirituality that does post-mishkan.
Yes, and actually, I'm going to suggest further. I'm going to suggest further if we assume more sophistication than people generally approach the great Parshan. Rashi, the Rambam. Thus far, I've expressed it in the Rambam, the world of Keseder. Right? That again, the world of Keseder and the Pshuto Shel Mikra, Mishkan existed before, it's derailed by Egel. But Chazal are nonetheless understanding that after the Mishkan, it's assuming a new function and a new role because mitzvahs grow with us. That's how I would articulate things from a Pshat Ramban perspective. Sam is developing the Sfarno a bit from this perspective. I am actually going to suggest even Rabbeinu HaKadosh Rashi, right? When Rashi provocatively asserts, Ein Mokta Mocher B'Torah, right? And Tzivi HaMishkan comes after, right? Even Rashi is going to have to recognize that on some level, the Torah wants us to envision a Mishkan of pre-Chet HaEgel and evolving after Chet HaEgel, and that's why the Torah is presenting it this way. I'm going to even argue something more provocative, and we'll see if Reb Gavriel's, how this sits with Reb Gavriel. Based on my greater methodology, I've given courses on this, that Rashi is clearly not limited to Pshuto Shel Mikra. One of the greatest farces and misunderstandings of Rashi al Torah is Vani Pasul Farish Pshuto means I'm only saying the Pshat. However, Rashi himself clearly asserts several times in Parshas Bereishis, Vani Pasul Farish Pshuto V'Agados Hamiyashu Samikra. I am giving Pshat, but I'm also bringing Agada if it's necessary for Yishuv Hamikra, which means if there's a powerful problem in the story of the Pesukim, right, which requires Agada, Medrash, not Pshat, I engage with it. Or as Rashi sometimes says, Eina Mikra Zeh Omer Ela Darshuni, it's screaming Darshuni. When the need for Drash is so primal and compelling, of course Rashi engages in Medrash, right? Rashi has a broader function than Pshat, right? He, as he clearly says in Bereishis, Vani Basu L'Farish Pshuto, V'yesh Medrashi Agada Rabbos Ve'enam Kipi Pshuto, he only rejects a Medrash if it is so distant from the Pshat. If it's part of a broader pshat, or what he calls Yishuv HaMikra, Rashi will go with it. So I would actually like to posit, right, to be able to integrate a fidelity to Pshuto Shel Mikra even in Rashi, that even Rashi might buy that the presentation of the Torah on a Pshuto Shel Mikra bare bones level is presenting things with a perspective. There was a Tzivi HaMishkan first, Egel, then created this evolution within Mishkan. When Rashi says that Tzivi HaMishkan is after, I'm going to suggest Rashi doesn't mean that on a level of Pshuto Shel Mikra. Rashi means that on a level of Drash and Agadas HaMiyashus HaMikra, because he's hearing some greater holistic need in the story to have both of these perspectives. Right? But to really fully tease out that methodological point, I'll have to talk about Rashi and my belief that Rashi actually demands that we maintain many inverse, even inverse perspectives and complementary greater truths in learning Chumash. Rashi is not the simplistic Pirish of 5-year-olds as many people believe, but we'll hold that for another occasion. I want to get back to Mishkan and this greater idea in Avoda. I want to harp on this idea, this greater idea in Avoda of mitzvahs growing with us, Mishkan growing with us. Very, very compelling. I'm using the same sitter I used before, but the sitter is different. The tefillin are different as I face down life challenges and issues, because that makes the Teres Chaim relevant to us as we go through life. I'm thinking of the story about Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner joked about the Bachar who was having issues in dating. And he said, this Bachar, he's interpreting every bracha in Shemayna Esrei, find me a shidduch. Baruch Aleinu, I need parnasa for a shidduch. V'lam al shinem, please destroy all the people who are scandalizing me and speaking lashon hara about me and shidduch. Right, everything you're dealing with in life, you see through the prism of where you're at. And I'm suggesting the Torah is modeling this because that's where things are supposed to B, and I'm going to actually argue that Parshas Kisisa, which is in a sense the linchpin Parsha within the greater Mishkan story, Truma Tetzava Kisisa, and then after Parshas Kisisa, the beginning of Parshas Kisisa concludes Sivei HaMishkan, that then proceeds with Egel, and then what happens here on earth as follows. I'm going to suggest that the very formulation of Parshas Kisisa is bringing out that the Mishkan is colored and evolves its meaning based on Chet HaEgel. Because the chiluk of the parsha of the Seder, as Kol Yisrael has embraced it, it could have been cobbled differently. One could have taken out a nice, large blade, knife, and cut Parshas Kisisa in half, and said, the beginning of Parshas Kisisa, right, the final tzivuyim of Mishkan, machza shekel to donate towards Mishkan, and shemen ha-mishcha, not building the Mishkan on Shabbos and the selection of Petzal and so forth, right? That could have been its own parsha, or maybe even part of Parshas Tetzaveh, probably what I would have done. And then have the Egel of Parshas Kisisa as a new parsha, right? But that's not what Kol Yisrael did. Kol Yisrael brought together the final aspects of the Mishkan itself with the story of Egel as one story to reflect one greater interwoven tapestry. Mishkan and the story of Egel collide and fuse together in Parshas Kisisa, impressing upon us that the meaning of Mishkan, as introduced in Truma Tetzaveh, the beginning of Kisisa, is actually being colored by Egel. And I'm going to further argue that in Parshas Kisisa itself, we have what I always call the bookend phenomenon. You know, I believe in bookends. Every parsha has a symmetrical beginning, symmetrical end. So Parshas Kisisa ends with the great Kapara story. Second Luchos, the first Yom Kippur, right? Luchos Shneis and all of that. It begins with Machzis HaShekel, which is thrice called Kapar. Torah says repeatedly, Machzis HaShekel in the beginning of Kisisa is Kofar Nafsho, Kesef HaKippurim L'Chaparel Nafsho Seichem. Kapar in the beginning, Kapar at the end. Balaturim actually draws correlations between the L'Chaper and Nafsho Seichem of Machzis HaShekel and Yom HaKippurim Avodas Yom HaKippurim, right? So Parshas Kisisa is beginning, seemingly in an ideal world, in an idyllic, pristine world, pre-Chet HaEgel, and yet it speaks of Kapara, I believe, sowing the seeds in Mishkan. This Mishkan is going to assume a greater Kaparic function, as is going to emerge after Chet HaEgel with the Yom Kippur, the symmetrical Kapara, at the end of Parshas Kisisa. The Tiras Chaim given by the Ribbono Shel Olam has all sorts of, you might say, DNA in it, right? DNA, which comes to life in the development of the organism. In this case, the Yiddish experience within the mitzvah that has always been planted in the Mishkan or in the mitzvah, as we experience it. One way, which I am want to explain how Mishkan assumes a new meaning post-Chet HaEgel, we know at the time of Chet HaEgel, Kol Yisrael had some deep need for corporeality, finding physical expression of the divine. However you understand Chet HaEgel per se, and there's of course an entire spectrum of explanations in Chazal and Gedolim Mefarshim, but they all point to some need. This is a basic human problem we have in dealing with Kiviyachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Dealing with the omnipotent who's beyond, and we are physical, we are limited people, right? And we have a need to make, you almost Chalila, humanize the Ribbono Shel Olam, make more physical, right? And we therefore struggle, right? We must focus on the midos of HaKadosh Baruch, which are very moving, midos which match up with human midos, Racham, Chanan, and so forth. And you understand the Ribbono Shel Olam is not defined by his midos, but this is a very difficult point, with it, which in its extreme leads to all sorts of idolatrous tendencies to Chalila actually make Getlachkeit into a Getchka. And so it's a very human need and a very human struggle. Godliness, to bring godliness, make a Getchka, to bring godliness into. So I'm going to suggest it's undeniable, though it might be uncomfortable for us to say, the Mishkan is filled with icons. L'kedusha. Think about the Kruvim, taking the cherubic hanhaga of those highest malachim and giving them physical form and in gold. And to a people who are just chote with Chet HaEgel, right? Golden idols. The correlation is unmistakable. I'm going to argue, provocative as this is by design. Klal Yisrael is being taught. You have a need now for iconicization, for physicality. There's a way within Torah to do it. And to make the subtle distinctions. This is an access route to the sublime. This is not the sublime itself. And so forth. And I'll tell you a delicious, delicious clue to this. A clue buried later in Parsha Shmini at the time of the inauguration of the Mishkan. When Aaron, who carries all the scars of Egel, because he was unfortunately a primal mover behind the Egel. And when Aaron steps up to the plate to be Makrif on that first day, and he is very, very uncomfortable, stigmatized. Moshe has to encourage him. No, Hashem chose you for this. Krav ha-mizbeach. Well, the Torah's Kohanim, as explained by the Ravid, says, when Aaron looked at the Mizbeach and he saw the Karnei ha-mizbeach, right? He saw the Karnei ha-egel. He saw the horns of the egel in the horns of the Mizbeach. And that's why he felt so uncomfortable. Now, I'm sure, Lahavdil, a 21st century psychologist, or all of us who like to play armchair psychologists, we want to go all sorts of places, this one, you know, in terms of images and associations and so on. I believe that might be a way for us to personalize the story, but certainly with Aaron, it's not delusion. It's not psychological. Aaron is in touch with the Panemius. I'm going to argue Aaron sees the ego in the Mizbeach because that is part of the Panemius. The Mishkan is taking some of what the ego was, the need for iconicization, and showing there's a way to do it towards Hashem without distracting from Hashem. He authentically saw the Karnei Mizbeach. Moshe is telling him, but don't be afraid of that. This is a profound point. Don't be afraid to face your skeletons of their past when they're redeemed, right? When we all take our points of struggle in life, right? And we find a redeemed expression of them, don't walk around feeling laden anymore. Now, Krav al HaMizbeach, walk around with your head held high. This is me. I went through the Kelkel, now I'm holding in the Tikkun, and now I'm greater than I ever was, as Reb Tzadok famously writes. True tshuva is only when a person can ultimately embrace even the failing as having dipped in something beautiful from Hashem because they did something beautiful with it. And Reb Tzadok writes, until a person does not feel redeemed on a human level, they are not really reconciled with Hashem either. To be complete, you need to feel complete. And how I've used the past, the past as an access route to something more beautiful. And I'm going to argue really what this evolving Mishkan is showing us is that the Mishkan of the past, the Torah of the past, has in it everything we need to satisfy our struggles, right? And so often, when we struggle with the Torah and feel the Torah is insufficient for us and we need to seek other pastures, we later come to realize, no, all of our needs were in the Torah HaKadosh.
That's why Aaron Cohen sees the Karnei. He's not saying suppress it. He's saying make use of it.
Excellent. Precisely. Precisely. And I'll trace to you another favorite pattern, which I've mentioned in the past to this effect. It's again in Parshas Kisisa, the linchpin parsha in this greater Mishkan Egel nexus. The Torah tells us, Vayatzer Aso Bacharit, when Aaron develops the Egel, which according to one reader in Rashi, Charit means a molder. Charit is really, means a molder. He utilized a molding machine to craft this Egel. Well, in the immediate passage which follows, when Moshe Rabbeinu is holding the luchos and witnessing that egel, and Moshe shatters those luchos, it speaks of the luchos, it describes the luchos as, or the writing on the luchos as charas al haluchos, engraved on the luchos. Comments Rashi, charas is the same word as charat, the chasresh, in both cases. Now to me it's uncanny. Two back-to-back narratives, both with the same root word for engraved. Right? The luchos, which have to be broken to tachat ha'egel, and the egel itself are both described as charat or charas engraved, and Rashi significantly is drawing the correlation. What is the significance? Well, I believe the Torah HaKadosh is telling us as follows. The need to engrave and create images, which we thought was a wayward tendency, which brought us away from Hashem. Guess what? The proper manifestation of that was all in the luchos. The luchos, which are an image, a sculpting of the Dvar Hashem, right? This charet of the egel was really charas al haluchos that all along you could find it in Torah. You don't have to seek other pastures. And the Jewish people are able to embrace the Mishkan of the past, the Torah of the past. now as relating to them and as a fulfillment of what was till now seen as a somewhat wayward need. There are other manifestations of this, but I think we will leave it with this for now and each internalize this in our own life. This is a scary notion, one which takes courage, a courage which will ultimately bring us to redemption. Why do I say that? This is scary. Right? It would be very convenient to believe in our Avodas HaTshuva and we move on. I don't have to think about that past. Right now, I'm in this cool Kaddish space and I expunge my past from me. Right? It doesn't really work. Our past always remains part of who we are. It doesn't really work, and it's not what Hashem wants either. It's scary. To recognize, I have no way out. My past, each of our past, is part of who we are. But our avoda is to make something beautiful out of it. That takes a lot of courage. But therein, we find true redemption. Therein, we find true redemption. I'm going to express some skepticism, and maybe a member of the mental health community will tell me something different. But some therapy techniques, which I've heard, right, to have a person in dealing with a very difficult experience of the past, memory of the past, something buried subliminally deep, to try to act it out and imagine that something else really happened, right? So let's say, I don't know, right? Let's say they had a horrible exchange with their now deceased mother, right? To replay the scene and imagine it as though, no, I handled that conversation differently. Now, clinically, if there has been success to this, I cannot contradict that, but I can't imagine that it's helpful for a person to delude themselves from what actually happened. I would imagine that only exacerbates the problem. Certainly anything I know dealing with life and interacting with people and those in my sphere of influence, delusion is so unhelpful. We find redemption in owning the past and owning the stigmas of the past and yet recognizing it really did happen and let me stare it down. But I've done something beautiful with it. I've grown from it. And there is and buried in the Torah HaKadosha itself is an access route to become a Torah, become a Mishkan, formed through the cauldron, the scalding cauldron of struggle. May we all be zeichet to have the courage to do this. Herein lies the promise of tshuva, kapara, redemption, and everything we so all ardently seek. Good shots.
It's in Bayat that talks about cases where there's subtle differences in text. And he says, like, essentially, Aaron by his Mesiris Nefesh shot and was the greater for the Chet. And therefore, Bayakel is, like, done in a more miraculous, more, I don't know if the word, more supernatural manner.